All right, peeps, on today's episode of the Kung Fu Genius, the genius will be answering questions from Patreon. Lots of gems, lots of rumble in the Bronx, and lots of, he's not going to talk about William Chung. He's actually going to talk about William Chung. Let's get to it.
And every day, I practice martial arts.
Yo, Dre, how you doing, man?
I'm doing rather groovy.
So here we are again with the super long table, 1989 Keaton edition. So we are having a on the video, it looks like we're like just right across from each other. But there's like
we're miles away. Yeah.
I feel like I have to shout to you to talk to you.
Yeah? Hey,
yo. So here we are with another episode of the KFG podcast.
We are here.
A few weeks ago, we did kind of a spicy one. Now, the funny thing is, because we pre-record all of our episodes, right, we never know which ones are going to get, like, you know, because every once in a while we'll have a KFG episode that hits. And for the most part, we have KFG episodes that they're just listened to by our very loyal and very awesome core group of listeners.
Exactly.
And every once in a while, we have a video that, as YouTube tells me, this video is getting wider reach to people outside of your subscriber base, right?
Oh, and this is one of them.
Yeah. And so we did an episode on, well, it wasn't planned that way, yeah, but we did a so-called William Chung episode. And of course, William Chung is a hot button topic because
it was just a question totally off top.
Well, it was a question from one of our Patreons, mm-hmm, and the Patreon asked a question which was born out of a book he had read, which happened to be from one of William Chung's students. And yeah, I felt that I couldn't adequately answer the question if I didn't give some background in, you know, what are very difficult to substantiate claims by right, Mr. William Chung. And of course, these are hot button topics because, you know, I come from the Leung Ting lineage,
yeah,
and I can speak in a very self-deprecating way about myself, my own lineage, the problems with my own lineage, even as you've obviously know, there are many times when we've talked about some of the problems with Sifu Leung Ting and
his
past behavior or whatever. So I can speak very openly about what has gone on in my association, yeah, but don't you dare speak about someone else's. All right. And what I think a lot of people missed, who got mad at me for that video. And by the way, who got mad at me for the video? It's only William Chung people. Mm. There were many William Chung people who actually supported my video, even commented on there. So it wasn't like, because a lot of people who can, like, you know, remove the emotional part,
yeah,
can go, yeah, I'm just, the video was about the problem of William Chung's claims, mm-hmm, and the fact that, you know, on two specific topics. One, William Chung's so-called traditional history, there's no evidence, it's only hearsay, you know? And two, on his constant retelling of what happened in Germany, which is at odds with evidence. So we have one very big claim about the history of Wing Chun by William Chung, which doesn't have any contemporary or any kind of evidence.
Yes.
Besides that he said it. And the other thing is
his story,
how he constantly retold what had happened in Germany, despite the fact that, you know, he didn't, at the first glance, he didn't know that there was video footage. He didn't know that there were photographs, right? And so all, man, I'm saying is, hey, look, there's problems with these things. I didn't say that he didn't learn from Yip Man. As a matter of fact, many times throughout the video, I talked about him being a legit student of Yip Man, even convincing friend Chan Chi Man to join, yeah, Wing Chun, right? And they're like, I didn't say that he didn't know Bruce Lee or wasn't friends with Bruce Lee, because the right, weird thing about it is that,
so commenters are saying this.
Well, commenters are like, well, he was a legit student of Yip Man and he knew Bruce Lee. Yeah, I'm talking about his historical claims. And I think this is what's difficult, because in the Wing Chun world, people can be, wow, very critical,
yeah,
and can be very logical about everyone else's instructor and association. But when you turn the lens on them, suddenly, mm-hmm, you're being salty. Well, why am I salty?
A lot of salt and vinegar.
William Chung doesn't, yeah, affect me one way or another.
Yeah.
His, you know, I mean, what he does doesn't affect my personal business. What it does affect, however, is that because he claims in his history that there is a modified and a traditional style, his historical claim doesn't just stay within the four walls of his association.
Mm-hmm.
His claims about history implicate the entire Yip Man Wing Chun universe, right?
Yeah, we're doing a modified version.
Exactly, right? So the thing is, based on his story, it's not just him saying like, he claims that he's the Grand Master of Wing Chun, and then you could either accept it or not, but ultimately other people don't really care. He's telling other Wing Chun people that the Wing Chun that they're doing is a Wing Chun that was made up on the fly by Leung Chun.
Modified on the spot.
Yeah, modified on the spot.
By Grandmaster Yip Man, which is a genius thing, by the way.
Yeah, you would have to be a Kung Fu genius to do that. So the reason why, because some people were like, oh, well, every Sifu embellishes the history a little bit. This is more than an embellishment. Mm-hmm. Like I say, it doesn't affect me personally in that, you know, what he does or what he teaches doesn't affect me at all. The problem is that to this day, I still get questions about whether I teach modified or traditional Wing Chun by people who don't know that those two terms were created by one particular line and it's not accepted outside. So when you make claims about a history that affects people outside of your own world, then you have to expect that other people are going to have some pushback. Like I made that analogy about you having a dog or lying about having a dog. Whether or not, you know, I believe that you have a dog or don't have a dog doesn't really affect anything outside of our relationship. But if I claim that the Wing Chun I teach is a real one and everyone else is fake, you are now making a claim that implicates other people. And you're also making a claim that implicates people who are no longer here to defend themselves. You're saying that Leung Chun was a confidence trickster who committed fraud on someone and perpetuated a fraudulent Wing Chun style. And you're saying Chan Mo Shun was some sociopathic bully who just wanted to beat up the sons of Leung Chun the moment Leung Chun died. And then you say that Yip Man was also a confidence trickster who perpetuated the same lie from Leung Chun. So it's not just someone claiming they're the grandmaster or claiming that they're the next head. It is now a story that implicates other people. And that is why I talked about it.
What a rabbit hole.
And the weird thing is, like many William Chung people, we have William Chung people who follow us on Patreon that were like, hey, right on, you did a great, you know, even-handed take on the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Because they saw that I was discussing his claims. I didn't say he didn't know Yip Man or learn from him. I didn't say he didn't know Bruce Lee. I didn't even say that traditional Wing Chun as a style is not effective. As a matter of fact, I'm really of the opinion that if William Chung had just done what I think he should have done, which is just say that these modifications were his own.
Right.
Okay?
I came up with these myself. Yes,
because look, he was a legit student of Yip Man, so he has that cred.
Yeah.
He was someone that Bruce Lee admired, right?
He's allowed to do that.
Yes.
As a Wing Chun practitioner.
He has the Bruce Lee endorsement, right?
Oh, yeah.
Jesse Glover, Dan Innocento, they all say that Bruce always talked about how good William Chung was. Mm-hmm. So he has the street cred. And if he had just said in the 70s, you know what, I found the Wing Chun that I learned from Yip Man to be problematic because it lacked this, this, and that, and the other thing. So I decided to re-engineer the footwork.
Yeah.
I decided to do this. And he really just said, it's Chung's Wing Chun. Then the conversation would be totally different. Because then I feel that even if William Chung has made some great strides in improving Wing Chun. Let's say the idea of going to the blind side, to the outside, which is a very smart idea.
Very.
The idea of having some special kind of footwork to bridge the gap so you don't get kicked. A lot of William Chung's, what I believe are his own modifications, actually think that they're quite all right. Okay?
Innovative.
Innovative, for sure. And had he just taken the credit for it and said, hey, this is my Wing Chun based on I'm going to re-engineer the forms, because I feel that we need to do the movements in this way. I'm going to re-engineer the footwork. Then the conversations we would be having about William Chung would not be about him implicating his dead Sifu and implicating the ancestors of Wing Chun with a story that has no evidence. It would just be like, hey, you know, William Chung has a different way of doing Wing Chun based on his fighting experience. And people, I think, would more likely be willing to engage him on the merits of his style.
Mm-hmm.
If he didn't create a story that is so clearly kind of a pastiche of the real history mixed in with his own narrative, which very perniciously implicates the characters of people, even people that William Chung himself knew. So that was the only reason why I talked about it. And the narrative, there were people that said, well, you know, these William Chung guys, why did you talk about this? Because the video is not about the fact that I, you know, am cool with Sifu Redmond or I know Sifu Rasan or know any of these guys. Yeah. If those guys wanted to do a video about them not thinking that Leung Tang was a real student of Yip Man, that is more than in their right. And yeah. if they had evidence to argue that, then okay, fine, no problem. Okay? It doesn't bother me. The thing is, the fact that they're my friends doesn't mean they're not allowed to have an opinion about the style that I teach. Okay? Chan Chi Man, who is a very good friend of mine, wasn't particularly fond of Leung Tang.
Okay.
Okay? And would tell me regularly. And he was my friend.
That's so what.
I considered him my friend. He considered me his friend. I believe, you can ask his daughter, Judy. I believe that we were close. Okay. Right. You've met him before.
Oh, really? What a cool guy.
I would probably say that I was probably pretty close to him. Would you agree?
We came
to his house, yeah. right? Yeah, he would have less than favorable things to say about Leung Tang. Would I go, oh my God,
yeah.
how can you be my friend and say something about Leung Tang? I mean,
that's his opinion.
What I don't understand is, you're one of my best buds.
Mm-hmm.
Do I not tell you when you do shit that drives me crazy?
Of course.
Right? Sometimes I say, like,
sometimes
hey, Trey,
you say it before it even happens.
Sometimes, yes, exactly, right? The thing, I don't understand this idea that, like, okay, if you're friends or you're cordial with someone, that means that you have to put a muzzle on your mouth about saying anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, but like that's not how I view friendship, right? And I can believe that William Cheung's claims about the history of his style are in fact not true without that having any diss on William Cheung's actual style or his position as a fighter back in the days or his position from Yip Man
right.
or my friendship with his own students. It's this very childlike idea of, oh, you're friends with someone, so you can't say anything, right? I don't really see any of those other guys being outraged when I talk some trash about my former association.
Mm-hmm.
Or when we talked about the whole Fight Quest debacle. Or when we talked about how I even got the Kung Fu Genius nickname because of the spat with Leung Tang.
Right.
Where was the outrage from these guys going like, yo, why are you talking about your former teacher like
yo,
that or whatever,
what's going
right?
on,
okay.
Man.
No, you know why there was no outrage? Because it's not their guy. Okay, so I can be self-deprecating and talk about my guy. Mm. I can look at someone else's claims and be like, I'm not convinced. And now suddenly I'm not allowed to say that because I'm cool with some of these guys, right? It doesn't make any sense. You're one of my best boys. And I always tell you when you do some shit that drives me nuts, right? And likewise, even though I'm your Sifu, if I do something that you don't like, you can tell me too. I wouldn't get my panties in a twist. We're
right.
adults.
We are.
I mean, most people are adults. Clearly
for the most,
in the comments
for the most part, yeah.
that many people are not yeah. adults. Or they think it was a knock on the style. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they want to come and fight. Well, look, every single one of those guys could beat me up and knock me out senseless.
Right.
That doesn't mean William Cheung's history is now true. Okay? And Leung Tang and people, and you know, funny, and there was another strain of people who yeah. would then attack Leung Tang. You know, for me, having an adult friendship with someone else doesn't mean you put a muzzle on your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And people go like, oh, these are really old. Oh, and there was another argument. Oh, these are really old things. Why are you bringing this back up? Dude, this is a Kung Fu podcast. How many new news stories are happening in Kung Fu every day? All right. Is there a steady stream of CNN doing reports on Kung Fu? Is there
so.
A steady stream of the New York
oh,
Times?
Oh, I know
covering
one.
It?
Kung yes. Fu Panda 4.
Kung Fu Panda 4, yes.
That came out.
So, I mean, if we could only talk about contemporary things that were happening in Chinese martial arts,
oh, man.
It would be like talking about delusional Wing Chun people who want to fight an MMA guy or the occasional Kung Fu movie that comes out, right?
Right.
If it's a podcast about Kung Fu, you're going to talk about old shit, all right?
I mean,
I talked about things
when
that happened in the 50s.
Oh, yeah.
Not a single one of these guys chirped, yo, why are you bringing up this shit from the 50s?
Yo, you're bringing up old shit.
All right? Because it's never politics unless it's about your guy. You never notice that? And a lot of these people, if they talk some trash about Leung Tang, which I invite them to, I don't give a shit. If they talk trash about Leung Tang, mm-hmm. oh, they're just saying their points about Leung Tang. That's objective stuff. That's not politics. But then when I say, well, there's no evidence for the claims of traditional Wing Chun as an actual style, how dare you bring up this old stuff? Okay? Because it's a podcast. We have to come up with stuff to talk about every week. And I avoided the William Cheung, Imin Bosepe thing forever. It was a joke. How many seasons? It was always
yeah.
the joke that someone would ask that question and I would go next.
Next, yeah.
You know,
right,
even
right,
it was
right.
like a weird Dryson hypothetical, like you know, after 5 minutes of an intro, it was like, so what do you think? So can you tell us about the William Cheung, Imin?
All right,
like,
right.
No. All right. One of our Patreons asked this question and I just felt, all right, look, let me just lay it out here.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, if you go back to that that video where I talked about the William Cheung's claims being problematic, I pinned a comment at the top which had my answers to the common so-called objections to the video. Like,
yeah,
why are you bringing this up? And what about Leung Ting or whatever? And I made a point that like Leung Ting could be a serial cat killer who teaches Kenpo karate mixed with Spanish fencing and Tai Chi and Bagua and call it Wing Chun. And he could be the most evil person in the world. And that doesn't substantiate William Cheung's claims. I don't understand why this is a hard thing for people to grasp. First of all, Leung Ting was one of many who called out William Cheung. He wasn't the only one. Okay. How come they don't have a problem with Wong Sun-leung? How come they have a problem with Choi Sung-teen or Yip Ching or any of those guys? They all called out William Cheung on these claims, right? Second, Leung Ting could legitimately be the biggest fraud, could be the worst person in the world. Mm-hmm. Okay, he could be the guy who puts the toilet paper roll the wrong way.
Oh.
Okay, all right. And how does that substantiate anything that William Cheung said? When William Cheung made these claims, he presumably made them without Leung Ting. So why is Leung Ting even? It's just because when a single person said, hey, Mr. Kung Fu Genius, there actually is evidence that Leung Baek existed and that the style he taught looks like William Cheung's style because look at this connection, look at these documents, look at these, not a single shred of evidence. It was always an ad hominem attack on someone else. And if your only defense of a subject is to avoid the subject and attack something else or to attack me for even talking about it, then maybe you don't have anything in defense of it, all right? I'm not the first person to defend Leung Ting's character, but if you want to say he wasn't a student of Yip Man, I can actually show you verifiable evidence that he was.
Okay.
But that's not my talking point. And I can show it to you and you can accept it or not. I'm still going to sleep fine at the end of the day. But I'm still waiting. It's still crickets on this traditional Wing Chun story, right? Like I said, William Cheung would have been better served to just admit that it was his own creation. All right, so now maybe we can finally get to the Mr. Owen's question. All right, go for
Owen's question. Well, it was a two-part question.
Hey, Kung Fu Genius fans. If you like what we do here, please consider supporting us on Patreon. For as little as $5 a month, you'll get early access to episodes and other goodies not posted on the Kung Fu Genius channel. With higher levels of support, you can get your name in the description, a live chat with me, or at the baller level, you even get your own personal KFG episode with me as my guest. The link to our Patreon page is in the description of this episode below. Patreons have a direct link to chat with me and get first dibs on any questions for Ask Me Anything episodes. Click on the link in the description for our Patreon page for more information, and I'll see you on Patreon.
We're going to go through the whole thing. In the book I'm reading, there are two topics I'd love to hear cleared up. Yip Man teaching the Chanhua Shan style to all his students, with exception to his only live-in disciple to whom he taught the Leung Baek version. What are your thoughts on this? And number two, was Bruce Lee kicked out of the school? This book credits Wong Shanlong and Choi Sung-teen with his training.
Okay.
This particular story continues with Bruce being kicked out of school and his training taken over by another. Both questions stem from modern Wing Chun. Fight Like a Woman, page 32.
Okay. So, as for the first question, I think the first video I did pretty much will clear that up. All
okay.
Right? There's nothing to indicate that if Leung Baek existed, which is already like if with a capital I, that he did anything other than teach Yip Man a more refined version of what he had learned before. So it wasn't, and also people forget, Yip Man talks about Leung Baek in his first New Martial Hero magazine.
Mm-hmm.
In it, he doesn't say that he learned a completely different style.
Okay.
He just says that he had gotten refinements, namely things like footwork or a more refined wooden dummy set. Mm-hmm. And he got details of the concepts and theory, because Chanhua Shan, not being a very educated guy, perhaps could not explain things like the centerline theory in detail, the higher concepts in Wing Chun.
Mm-hmm.
And so it took someone who was more scholarly, like Leung Baek, if Leung Baek in fact existed, to teach Yip Man these things. But nothing in Yip Man's own story, in his own words, which is the only evidence we have, indicates that he learned a completely different style. Okay? Now, of course, this is where the sausage of conspiracy is made, because then William Cheung guys would say, well, of course he didn't say that, because the Leung Baek style is secret, and he only taught it to William Cheung, so why would he then admit in a magazine that it was a totally different re-engineered style. And I go, but that's a weak claim because you can make that with anything. Mm. Okay. You could say, well, how do you know that it wasn't actually Hungar that he learned from Leung Bik? And he's just saying that it was more refinements and he took a bunch of Hungar moves and added it to Wing Chun. Because you can infer anything that wasn't stated and then say, see, but that is trying to use something that is absent as evidence. Okay.
Absent and
you cannot make that chess move. You cannot say, because Yip Man didn't say it, therefore it must be true. Okay, if Yip Man, because then you could literally make up any narrative you wanted.
Anything.
You could say that Yip Man learned a high version of Tai Chi from Leung Bik. Mm. And that's what he gave to William Chung, all right? Well, he didn't say because he wants to keep it a secret. That's not a move you can make in debate and in logic. You'll get thrown out of a debate if you try to make that okay. case. All right, because that's not a move you're allowed to make. That is a checkers move done in chess. Okay, and so you simply can't do it. Also, if the whole Leung Bik story was so secret because he really did learn a completely different style from Leung Bik, why did he even mention it at all? Okay,
oh.
Because no one really seemed to have any evidence that Leung Bik existed. So why would Yip Man even bring it up? If it's a secret style that he learned, why would he want people to know if he wasn't teaching it anyway? Plus, it says that it's saying that Yip Man, when he wants to forge a reputation for Wing Chun in Hong Kong, opted to teach an inferior style. And every time he's photographed doing this inferior style.
Okay.
Which also begs the question, if you don't practice something, how do you get good at it? If Yip Man never practiced the traditional Wing Chun style because he was sworn by an oath not to teach it, when did he keep it in training?
Okay.
All right. When you look at how William Chung reacts to a straight punch and you look at how a lot of other Wing Chun people under Yip Man react to a straight punch, then you would have to ask, so did Yip Man stand there and go, I'm going to have to use this way of reacting. No, I'm going to use this way. That's incoherent for a fighting style because you would train the thing that you want to get good at. And if you don't train it, you won't get good at it. So if Yip Man never showed it, if Yip Man never did it, how did he keep it in practice?
Yeah.
And why would he not want to keep a style in practice that he knew was better? And the other thing that, because William Chung was pretty much absent during the 60s in Hong Kong, he was in Australia by that point, he didn't know that he had filmed a video with Tang Sang and that later he had filmed a video shortly before he passed away, saying like a dying man tells no lies, right? Why would Yip Man not leave any record of this thing, written or video or otherwise? Why is every photo of Yip Man, video of Yip Man, him displaying the inferior style?
It was a real secret.
All right. And his grand plan to preserve this gem of Chinese martial arts was to give it to some street gangster who was a teenager who learned from him for a couple of years and then left Hong Kong.
Mm.
Especially, think about this. This is also a part that really nullifies the story. If Yip Man knew that this was a very special style that he needed to pass on to someone. Well, William Chung left Hong Kong, 1959, 1960 to go to Australia. Yip Man was still alive for another 12 years. So was he then just like, well, I hope that one guy who went to Australia did it, especially knowing that Yip Man didn't even want foreigners to learn the style.
Uh-huh.
So Yip Man was okay that the only person who inherited his real style moved to a freaking Western country and was no longer in Hong Kong.
That's it.
And then he wouldn't say maybe give it to another person just in case.
Yeah.
It's incoherent. Mm. All right. You wouldn't need to believe this. If you're not indoctrinated, you have no reason to believe it. Just is what it is. So anyway, on the first point, Yip Man did not give a Leung Bik style to one teenage student in 1959 when he still taught for 12 more years. All right. That's incoherent. Okay. The second point. The second point was about Bruce Lee. What can you restate that?
Kicked out of the school. This book credits Wang Shengliang as and Choi Sung Tin with his training.
Mm-hmm.
This particular story continues with Bruce being kicked out of school and his training taken over by another.
Yeah.
Both questions stem from modern Wing Chun.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, you know, it's not to disavow everything that comes out of William Cheung's mouth or from William Cheung's students, because for sure William Cheung was there and William Cheung knows things I don't know and mm-hmm. and can tell stories. But the problem is that there's a very heavy bias towards certain narratives. Whether Bruce Lee was really kicked out of Yip Man's school, that's like a very common trope that people say. Mm. And it's, oh, because he was not completely Chinese and Yip Man didn't got pressure from the other students because Bruce wasn't really Chinese.
Did he find out he was not completely Chinese later?
Well, yeah, that's also the other thing, too. It's like, dumbasses.
He thought he was Chinese the whole time. And then Lady's like, wait, this dude's ain't.
Dumbasses. Yip Man and Lei Hoi Chun, Bruce Lee's father, were friends for years.
Yeah.
Because they both smoked opium together.
Of course.
Did Yip Man not know that Lei Hoi Chun's wife, Grace Ho, was from the Ho Tong family and that she was not pure blood Chinese? Like, and you know what's also bizarre? Bruce Lee's mother, Grace Ho, she came from the Ho Tong family mm-hmm. in Hong Kong, which it is akin to like the Rockefellers in New York. Okay, so she came from a very wealthy, very established family.
I think Yip Man knew about that.
Okay, yes. I mean, it would be
like, common knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, this idea that like Bruce joined his school. First of all, Bruce was a child movie star.
Yeah.
Everyone knew who Bruce Lee was. Yip Man personally knew Bruce Lee's father for years.
Right.
I have very little reason to doubt that Yip Man knew Bruce Lee's lineage, that his mom is Grace Ho from the Ho Tong family. Okay. So the idea that Bruce somehow, because of his ruggedly good Chinese mm-hmm. looks, managed to slip under the radar only to be found out later that he wasn't pure blood Chinese is ridiculous. Okay. So let's say he was accepted in the Yip Man school.
Mm-hmm.
Yip Man knew he wasn't pure blood Chinese, but now the other narrative is it was the other students who found out and then didn't like it. Okay.
Mm.
All right. So Yip Man, who barely has enough students to keep the doors open, is going to get rid of students that easily because of pressure from his other students. Need I remind you, as I've told on this podcast about two times,
mm-hmm.
okay. Yip Man had a girlfriend that his students hated.
Mm-hmm.
She was a younger girl. She was the mother of his third son, Yip Siwa. And they didn't like her because they felt that she was quite uncouth. She, used dirty language. She, she was younger. You know, she was maybe in her, I guess, 30s maybe. So compared to Yip Man, was quite
50 the young one, right? Plus.
But even Chan Shi Man said, oh, but she was not even good looking.
Oh, man.
So they're like, oh, she wasn't good looking. She was kind of belligerent towards Yip Man. Mm. So it's not like she was really nice or respectful. And the students hated her. The students banded together and wrote a letter to Yip Man saying, like, you got to get rid of her or we're going to go. And Yip Man was like, whatever. He ignored it. Okay.
Mm.
But now some students say, oh, you got to get rid of Bruce because he has one quarter non-Chinese blood.
Wow.
It seems if Bruce were really kicked out of the Yip Man school, it would maybe be because he was starting trouble with other people. I mean, the story was, even I think Wong So-leung told it that, you know, when Bruce had first joined,
mm-hmm.
you know, even right from the beginning, he was kind of like, you know, getting a little testy with the other people in the class. And maybe some of the seniors just felt uncomfortable because he was a bit challenging. Right.
Mm.
I am agnostic to whether Yip Man really kicked Bruce out of the school, because the problem is I've heard stories, both sides, that, oh, no, it wasn't true. And yes, it was true. And then I've also kind of tried to think about this logically, about what we know about Yip Man, what we know about Yip Man's relationship with Bruce Lee's father and everything like that, to see if the story even passes the smell test. So I'm saying it could be very well true that Yip Man said, oh, okay, Bruce, you got to go. I'm getting some pressure from other people. All right.
Yeah.
But what we do also know about Yip Man during that time period is that he was suffering from a very heavy opium addiction, mostly encouraged by that girlfriend that he was having, which is another reason why they didn't like her. So as a result, Yip Man wasn't teaching a lot of the students himself at that time, really that time of the late 50s. So people like Wong So-leung, even William Cheung, Chan Chi Man, they were able to learn from Yip Man kind of before this problem really started.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time Bruce Lee came along, it seems that Yip Man was maybe in the throes of a pretty heavy addiction. So it seems that he wasn't doing much teaching to begin with.
Okay.
And if your Sifu is going through some real difficult personal times, then it's not a big leap to see why he learned from Wong Sun Leung. Not to mention, it was a very common practice in those days that even if you learned from in your Sifu school, you were usually coached by a Siheng. That, you know, most of the Sifus were somewhat hands-off until you had been around for a while, or maybe if you were giving them extra money to learn private lessons or whatever. Right. So there's not a lot of logic leaps you have to go through to see why, like, Bruce Lee ended up learning from Wong Sun Leung. Not to mention the fact that Bruce Lee only cared about fighting, and Wong Sun Leung was the best fighter.
Okay.
Right? So why is he hanging around with people like Wong Sun Leung and William Chang? These are the guys who are going around and fighting. Those are the people that he cared about, right? I never heard about him learning from Choi Sung Tin. And what I do have to say about that is this. Everyone who's in a kung fu school is potentially someone who taught someone there. I remember one time, once my school started to take off in the late 2000s, I had a visitor come from Germany. And then he was like, my Sifu is, and I forget his Sifu's name. And he goes, yeah, he trained with you at the castle. And he said he even taught you a lot of things. Okay. Right. And I was like, I remember back then going, wait, what was his name again? And then I thought about it. And I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that guy. And that guy was in the class with me.
Yeah.
I barely spoke 10 words to him. And he was senior to me.
Yeah.
And I very rarely crossed hands with him because he was like training with the other senior students. But now that, you know, by 2010, my school was really big and, you know, I'm like in the book with Leung Tang and all this kind of stuff. Now, suddenly, oh, he taught me. All right. So it also seems to be a common practice that whenever a classmate does well, that suddenly everyone, like, think about, you've trained in my school for all these years. Think of all the training partners you've had.
Like,
right. I mean, you can't even count them.
Yeah.
How many people have you stuck hands with? How many people have you done sparring
with?
How many
intros I've given?
How many intros you've given? How many, like, you know, how many times have you, you know, traded techniques and practiced with other people at the school? Mm-hmm. All right. Now imagine you become a really famous Wing Chun practitioner and someone who didn't really hit the mark themselves is like, oh yeah, I used to teach Dre when he started.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that might be true, but that doesn't mean shit now. Now I'm not saying Choi Sung Tin is making this claim. Obviously, this claim is coming from Eric Oram. I don't know if Choi Sung Tin really claimed that he taught Bruce Lee, but did Choi Sung Tin maybe do some chi sa with Bruce Lee when he was there? Maybe. All right. I mean, if he stuck hands with him on a couple occasions, was he really teaching Bruce Lee, or did he give Bruce Lee a couple tips? I mean, does everyone who's a little higher than you,
mm-hmm.
who sticks hands with you, are they now all your teachers? You can make an argument, but would Bruce Lee, if you asked him in 1967, hey, how much was Choi Sung Tin's influence in your Wing Chun? I mean, are you going to get an answer that's going to say, yeah, he was one of the main guys who taught me along with Wong Sun Leung and William Chang? I don't know. Maybe. The thing is that we don't know. I have reason to believe that, you know, Bruce Lee had a habit of wanting to learn from the people who are like the best fighters. And Choi Sung Tin famously lost his one and only fight. It's a famous story. Like he was too paralyzed to move forward.
Oh.
And he got kicked, and he just basically stood there and he got kicked. And so that story predates Bruce Lee going there. So, I mean, given what we know about Bruce Lee, I don't know if Choi Sung Tin would be the guy that he wants to learn from. Now, did Choi Sung Tin teach him some Sunam Tower, teach him Chi Sao? Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But given what we know about who Bruce Lee preferred to learn from, I don't know if that is really the case. It could be.
Okay.
It could be. All right. But I don't know. I cannot substantiate that either way. So, all right. Cool. We have another question, right? Wasn't there another one?
We have another one from Robert Dreeben.
So what if you could transport back in time for a front row seat into the life and legacy of one of the most respected Wing Chun masters in history? Gong Sao Wong, a tribute, direct students on Sifu Wong Sun Leung, offers you just that. Through a series of exclusive conversations, 25 direct students share anecdotes, reflections, and personal stories offering in-depth understanding of the man behind the legend. Order your copy today across 12 Amazon marketplaces with free shipping. I absolutely love this book, and I think you'll find it an indispensable part of your collection. I can't recommend it enough. Get yours today. Go to Amazon, type in Gong Sao Wong, and there you go.
Fantastic.
Okay. Hey, Alex. This was a very detailed and interesting delineation.
Wow, that's a fancy word there, Dre.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yip Man's paper. Someone give
Dre a cookie. Dre, here's, cookies coming.
Give me the cookie. Of Yip Man's paper. Your commentary was both logical and reasonable. As always, I learn one or more new words to add to my vocabulary.
Wow.
This is
Wait a minute.
The norm.
Are you sure you didn't write this question?
I did not write Robert Dreeben. No, I would not.
Accused of writing our own questions.
I'm just wondering if
Robert. I'm not Robert Dreeben.
I'm not Dreisen.
No one
accused you of being Dreisen.
Yeah,
Dre.
You're being a little bit defensive.
Yeah, you need to calm down.
It would be interesting to know what Yip Man's Sihang's versions.
He was doing so well as
of
well.
Of the styles. You can edit that.
No, Andrew.
No,
that
you
in.
Don't. No, leave
you
that
got that,
in.
Andrew.
Leave
I know
in.
You got that.
Ha!
Styles history was told to their students, and if there are any similarities or disparities of the main characters, I've also wondered why, assuming the lore, third party, and hearsay is just a fable with no basis in fact or truth. Would our male grandmasters through generations credit the development of Wing Chun to a female when China, especially during the Ming and Qing dynasties, was very much a patriarchal society? Not exactly flattering in that historical context.
Could you just say patriarchal again, just one more time?
I will not. I refuse.
Patriarchal?
I refuse to entertain you.
That's a really good question, given the extremely patriarchal roots of Chinese history, Chinese martial arts.
Love it.
You know, the Chinese hierarchy.
Yes.
Why would our founders pick, of all people, two females to be the founder of our style, right? And that's a really good question. I mean, I cannot sit here and say, oh, I know the answer to that. I mean, even most of the stuff that I'm talking about when I discuss history, like, so he's referencing, I did a video which is available here for YouTube subscribers.
Okay.
It's like about a 45-50 minute video.
Mm-hmm.
Where I read Grandmaster Yip Man's written history. I read an English translation from Leung Ting's book, and I give some commentary. It's about 8 paragraphs. After each paragraph, I talk about, you know, what are the interesting points and what are the things where maybe this contradicts with what we know or so on and so forth. And so it's like a critical take on Yip Man's written lore, right?
Would you ever be able to put that link in the...
Yeah, well, to become a subscriber here,
yeah.
I think.
Oh, you have to become a
subscriber. You can get that one at the $9.99 level here.
Got it.
And then our Patreons get it on like the second tier or something
Sweet.
Like that, right? And I'll be doing more of those deep dives. And those are somewhat scripted. So it's not like me just, you know, shooting the shit with you about history. Like, it's me like talking directly to the camera. I've scripted it. I've talked about it. I'm very, unlike these episodes, I'm very concise.
Got it.
and go into detail there. But really, you know, to be open and honest, there's nothing we can really state too positively about the history of Wing Chun. Mostly what we can do is we can say, certain things most likely didn't happen, but it's very difficult to pose positive claims to say, but this is what happened, because there's a lack of written records. We have hearsay on top of hearsay.
Man.
We have well-known noisemakers on YouTube claiming, no, this is true.
Mm.
But the subtitle should say, I believe this because a Chinese guy that I like told this to me. So therefore, I'm going to tell it to you like it's fact because this person came from mainland China and you haven't heard of them. Therefore, what they're saying is true. This is not how historical methodology works. And you always have to be mindful when the researcher is also selling the research that they found. Okay? Because now they have a financial interest in the thing that if they're telling you that what they are selling you is the authentic and the original one, then they have a financial interest to prop up the history they are giving you to prove that what they are doing is the authentic and the original one. It's circular, and you need to be very mindful, okay? Be wary when getting your research from salesmen who are selling the research.
Damn.
Okay? That is a huge, what do they say, red flag, all right? That maybe you need to be careful, all right? So what we can say about certain stories is that certain things are most likely true. The William Chung's Leung Bik story, on balance of evidence, even if it were true, there's nothing to substantiate it. So the probability, if you're looking at it using kind of modern historical methodology, on balance of evidence, the Leung Bik story as told by William Chung is not true. Okay, or we cannot say it with 100% certainty.
We'll based on evidence.
With a very high degree of certainty, we could say the probability is that it's a false story, okay? It comes off as a bit of a fairy tale. It comes off as a narrative fiction. It's at odds with the things that we do know, which doesn't disprove it. It doesn't bode well for it in terms of making it a bulletproof, a theory claim that historians can have a consensus on, right? The, you know, five elders escaping the burning of the Shaolin is very clear. It's very clear that that's a lore and that's a fiction. All right. I sound like a broken record. The Shaolin Temple five elder story is plagiarized from the Hongmun story, which is itself a fake story. So the Kung Fu story that people believe with, you know, 100%, like zealots almost, is a plagiarization of a fake story. Okay, so I mean, what more do you want?
Yeah.
Someone is copying the homework of someone who made shit up.
Yeah.
Okay, so you want to argue the details about, was Yim Wing Chun's father was like was a salt merchant, or no, he was like, he sold something. We're arguing things that
you can't get mad if you get an F.
Exactly. I mean,
when you're looking at this dude's
insert test. Your own details, right?
Yeah.
But the question is really good, okay? Mm. Given how kind of male-dominated, at least the narrative is with Chinese martial arts, and the history of most Chinese martial arts is that it's been a male grandmaster. And I'm not saying that to be like, oh, there should be some equality. How come, you know, like in the 1800s, there wasn't like a female grandmaster of whatever. I mean, it is what it is, right? There is a female grandmaster of the Eagle Claw style. The Lao family Eagle Claw. This is Lily Lao, who inherited the style from her father when her father, Lao Fatmang, passed away. Okay. So we have a modern day female grandmaster of a legit line of succession in Chinese martial arts.
There you go.
But in the past, that was extremely rare. All right. And so then the question is, well, then how come if they're going to make up a story, why would they make up a story that was like had so many females in it? Right. OK. And to be totally honest, I don't have the answer for that. I can tell you some speculation, but the difference between me and someone else who tells history is they have heard the same speculation, but they'll tell you that that's why. And I'll just tell you, no, it's just speculation.
Yeah.
All right. And so when you look at the name of our style, okay, so it's Wing Chun to praise. This Wing is to praise. It's not eternal. People in the Yip Man style, you got to stop saying Wing Chun means eternal spring.
Ooh.
Okay. Because eternal spring, Wing.
Ooh, that's controversy right there.
Well, it's another Chinese character that looks similar to ours, and that is also another style of Kung Fu, which most likely is related to us.
Oh, man.
Okay? But there is an eternal spring style, and then there is a praise spring style. And in the Yip Man family, we use the praise spring, okay? Now, we can debate whether one is authentic or not. Like, that's another debate, but I'm just saying, like, if you're in the Yip Man lineage, stop calling it Eternal Spring. That's literally not what that first character means. Also, please stop calling the Wing Chun knives butterfly swords. They are not butterfly swords.
Oh, that's okay. Controversy.
Batam, though, is the name of the technique, and oftentimes is the name of the knife. The name of the knife is either just Seung Do, double knives, or Bao Chang Do, the knife that goes to your elbow. Wing Chun people, Yip Man Wing Chun people, even Yip Man's interview, don't call it butterfly swords. That's another type of knife. It's another type of form. It comes from another style. If I have to hear another Wing Chun person from the Yip Man lineage talking about the butterfly swords. I'm going to go crazy. Usually the people who teach the butterfly swords are also the people who teach Eternal Spring.
Can you teach me the butterfly effect?
I'll teach you the butterfly effect. All right.
Please.
So the name Wing Chun, all right, if you go praise spring, could be a lady's name, all right? But clearly it seems to be a modification of Eternal Spring, which was most likely the one of the ancestor styles of Wing Chun is the Wing Chun Bat Hawk, the Eternal Spring White Crane from Fujian.
Mm.
If there's a so-called Shaolin, even though it's not really called Shaolin, our quote-unquote Shaolin ancestor is in fact just, it's Eternal Spring White Crane from Fujian, most likely brought over to Canton via the Hakka people.
Mm-hmm.
Which then they mix that with their own indigenous martial arts. And then, you know, then it's locally influenced by various sifus or whatever. And then these things get solidified over time. But the idea that a style like Wing Chun, like the style that we do, was like solidified hundreds and hundreds of years ago and have been passed down in the exact same way is that is pretty verifiably false. I mean, like there's really no evidence to suggest that. There's some people in the Yip Man family who really believe that what they are doing, if they could go back in time to the 1700s, you're going to see Yim Wing Chun doing the Siu Nam Tao form the way we do it. And there's no evidence to suggest that the modern form system we have with the three forms and the dummy didn't come like from the mid 19th century, but certainly it's not a style that was developed with the three forms, the wooden dummy, the knife and the pole, and then preserved and passed on for hundreds of years to you. This is something that has been edited, re-edited, changed, things Man. Taken out, things put in, you know, accretions later, put in here, different things changed. Then another sifu came in, changed the framework entirely or whatever. If you really believe that you're teaching some kind of unaltered museum piece from hundreds of years ago, I have a bridge in Brooklyn I want to sell you, all right? Yeah. It's
How
just,
much?
It's a real, really good price. Oh. All right, just 60K.
That's okay, really that's not price. Bad.
Really good price.
It's not bad.
So then we come to these questions. So why would they then put in some females, right? Well, there could be a narrative that was important for some Wing Chun Sifu that the style was, and this is speculation. This is not
speculation.
I'm not saying, oh, this is the reason why. Wing Chun is a style that, unlike some of the other Kung Fu styles, you're supposed to be able to use it in a relatively short period of time. And it's supposed to be able to work against a bigger, stronger attacker because we focus on like borrow force, unload power, rather than trying to hold off someone else's force, right? So if you want to prop up this narrative that your style is for fighting bigger, stronger opponents, even if you are weaker or haven't been learning for as long, well, then it could make sense to make a story where the person who first learned it only had a short time to learn it, as Yim Wing Chun only had a short time to learn the style.
Well, she had like 6 months.
Yeah, and she happened to be female, and she was fighting a, you know, bigger, angrier bandit who was trying to steal her away.
What a bandit.
So it could be a matter of, in the marketing of Wing Chun as a style that could be learned relatively quickly and used against bigger, stronger attackers, poof, there's your story reverse engineered.
Yeah.
It's interesting that the original Shaolin Five Elders story, the one that comes from like the Hongmun Triads, the names of the Five Elders are not the same as the names of the Five Elders in Kung Fu lore. And the original Five Elders were all men. Okay, so in the original story, it was not four men and a lady. That sounds, sounds like some movie from the 80s. Three men and a baby, yeah. four monks and a lady. yeah. Four monks and a nun. All right. So it's like a bad joke. Yeah. Four monks and a nun walk into a bar, right?
okay.
Also, it's incoherent that at the Shaolin Monastery, which is for monks, which is men, that there would be a lady there. Okay. Because Buddhists They have female clergy, and they're called nuns, and they go to nunneries.
Yeah.
In fact, in Hong Kong, there's the Chi Lin Nunnery, which is near Diamond Hill. If you're ever in Hong Kong, you should go there. Just don't take photos because they'll kick you out. Yeah. It is the nicest temple with the nastiest people working there.
they will kick you out.
If you ever want proof that Buddhism can be somewhat militant, take a photo doing a bong sao at the Chi Lin Nunnery, and then watch some really cranky Buddhist come at you and tell you to get out.
Get the hell out of here.
So the original story didn't have four monks and a nun because the Shaolin monastery would only be monks, not nuns. So the Kung Fu plagiarism added one female there. Okay? But that is a much later accretion of the story. Okay? So already... I don't know the answer why they decided to have a woman, besides maybe that it's part of the marketing of the style, learning quickly, whatever, right?
Marketing genius.
All I can say is that the fact that there was a woman there wasn't in the first iteration of the story. So for whatever reason, that part was changed.
It's probably one of the monks' girls.
Okay. Maybe. There's also because the main thrust of these original secret societies, was to, Fan Cheng Fo Ming, was to overthrow the Qing and to restore the Ming, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of in the code words, there's a lot of embedded imagery, and there's a lot of embedded secret code words for people who were members of these groups, because these groups were being hunted by the Qing government. So you had to have a secret handshake, and you had to have a secret knock on the door to even get in, right? And one of the ideas about restoring the Ming, which was the previous dynasty, is that in Chinese, the culture, they view springtime as the rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the Lunar New Year in China, it's really kind of the beginning of spring.
Yeah.
Okay? And that is the rebirth. It's not somewhere in the middle of winter like it is, or towards the, in winter like it is for us. It's kind of like the beginning of springtime being a rebirth. Well, when you're trying to oust the current regime, all right, which is the Qing, you want to bring back a new rebirth. The new rebirth is what? It's spring. Spring in Chinese is Chun. You want to maintain this forever, Wang Chun. The forever spring, to forever bring the spring back. So it's easy to see where that name could have been involved in some secret triad code words in terms of bringing back spring and then giving someone a name which sounded like to restore or to praise the springtime, which they want to bring back. So it's possible that this is just coded language, but that is a speculation. I can't stand here and tell you, no, that's what happened. The difference between me and another white dude who would hear this, be like, oh, yo, let me tell you, I went to China and I found out the real stuff.
Yeah,
bro, going to China, going to Hong Kong, and listening to these guys tell you stuff, you are listening to them tell you stories that they heard that they also cannot substantiate. And the fact that you heard the story from a Chinese dude in Hong Kong or mainland China doesn't give it any more heft. It's just another story. When you want to prove if something is true, you need evidence.
Yeah.
You need contemporary evidence from that time, preferably from multiple sources that don't know each other, verifying the same thing. When you say, well, the Yin Wing Chun story has been told by many Sifus. Yeah, it's been told by many Sifus who heard the same story.
Right,
these are not independent accounts. These are people repeating what they heard the other person saying, and they're repeating from the same source. That doesn't suddenly, I can't tell you a story. You tell it to 100 people. Those 100 people tell the story, and now we say we have 100 attestations to the story because they're all telling the one story that you told. I don't know why even the most amateur of historians don't get this. They're because some of the pushback I got on saying that the Moi Yin Wing Chun story isn't true is, no, Choi Shun Tin said it. No, Lok Yu said it. No, so, yeah, who did they hear it from? They heard it from Yip Man.
Yeah.
I'm disputing the Yip Man story. I'm not disputing the 80 people under him who told the same story because that would be foolhardy. We're disputing the original story. We're not disputing the people who just kept repeating the same thing.
Crazy.
This is not a point that when I say it to you, it's very obvious. It's clearly not obvious to most people who are who just say like, no, Yim Wing Chun learned from Nmoy. Where'd you get it? My Sifu told me. Where'd he get it from? Okay. And the fact that something was in a book doesn't make it true or doesn't make it more legit, because you know what you do when you find, you know, if you're trying to find the source of something and someone said something in a book, and then what do? You go into the bibliography and you find out where was their source for this? Mm. And then you find that source was another book. Well, the fact that they got it from another book doesn't now mean that that thing is true. It just tells you that that nugget they got from this book. So you know what you do? You buy that book and you find where that nugget came from.
Yeah.
And you go to see where did they get it from. And if they have a bibliography, you go, oh, they got it from this book. You get that book.
Yeah.
And you keep going back until you find the original source. And what you'll find is, even when people are doing the thing they're supposed to do, which is reference your sources, the fact that you have a source doesn't automatically mean that the source is legit, because the source could be copying from a source, which could be copying from a source, which could be copying from a source.
Well,
in history, you have to find where the primary source is. And if you go back far enough in Chinese Kung Fu sources, when you come to the primary source, dollars to donuts, the primary source was, in our style, Ip Man said it to someone. And now it's hearsay. It's not an independently verified source. You could have 20 books that cite the, each book cites the next book, and that doesn't make it 20 times stronger. In fact, it makes it 20 times weaker because it's a copy of 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 a story.
Well, could it be some really old guy, like a, what, 70-year-old guy, heard this from a 100-year-old guy that heard it from another 100-year-old guy?
Absolutely.
And then you got like less.
It could be. It could be. But the problem is, how do we verify that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because
that third 100-year-old guy or second 100-year-old guy was there, actually. There.
Yeah. No, I get it. You could have a stronger case for hearsay if the hearsay was a direct source. The problem is, it's not recorded. So we don't know if that is in fact true. Two, we don't know if that story had been changed. Because one of the funny things about the William Chung episode that we did that everyone got salty about is, remember I was telling the story about the Cologne incident?
Yeah.
About what happened in Germany?
Uh-huh.
And I was saying, well, I'm not quite sure if it happened this way, or I'm not quite sure if it happened this way. Dude, that happened in 1986.
Okay.
And I talked to people who were there, and I talked to people who were at the castle when they were preparing to figure out who was going to go fight William Chung.
Uh-huh.
So I actually heard from people who were around at that time.
Who were there
and,
there.
And, yeah. And even I have to go, well, I'm not sure if it went this way, or I'm not sure if it went that way. And we're talking about 1986.
Yeah.
Okay. So when people come and tell me like, oh no, like in the 1700s, this guy taught this guy.
Uh-huh.
I have two middle fingers for you. Okay, someone told you that.
Uh-huh.
All right,
right.
But your contemporary sources, your written sources, where are they? They're not there. It's possible the story is true, but you got no facts.
Mm-mm.
And that's all I gotta say about that. All right, everyone. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Kung Fu Genius. As always, don't forget to subscribe to the Kung Fu Genius. Support us on Patreon. I forgot to mention Patreon. Patreon.com/thekungfugenius for all your Kung Fu Genius needs. And as always, I'll see you guys next time. Word is I'm a Kung Fu Genius. Technique speaks for me, not lineage. Forget Jet Li, cause I'm the one. Many call me Sifu, but to you I'm Seagung. And I produce masters. You surpassed us. Your Kung Fu stiffer than corpse and caskets. City Wing Chun is the house I built. Violate the gate and your blood gets spilt. Alex Richter, always the victor. And you know I do Kung Fu, cause I practice on your cactus wearing scented prophylactics. Okay, ready? Yeah, to get that
with pre-tie mark.
No, don't put it behind you. You can see that in the camera, genius.
So he just
genius.
I gotta hide this plastic thing. Let me put it in clear fucking view of the camera right behind me.
I love you.
My God.
Oh, just so you're just gonna right there. Wow. Yeah. So I have to look at it.
You have to look at it.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Do we have another warning going
on? Oh, by the way.
Yeah.
This was the day.
Okay. Oh, aftershocks. Okay, all right. For those watching, so obviously we pre-record all these episodes. This episode was recorded on April 5th, and today we had, very bizarrely, an earthquake in New York City.
A 5 point something.
5.5.
Well, apparently it was in Jersey.
It was, of course it was in Jersey.
Yeah. Yeah, and we felt it here.
Yeah, freaking Jersey.
Yeah, we always felt it.
Thanks, Jersey.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we're getting these. What was great is that we got the emergency alert about the earthquake 45 minutes after it happened. Fantastic.
Wrapped in plastic.
Wrapped in plastic.